This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, on Sunday, the elections for the National Assembly, that is the French Parliament, took place. And as we know, last month, President Macron had an emphatic victory in the presidential election when he won, I think, 58% of the vote against Marine Le Pen. And really, the theme of his appeal in the presidential election was anybody but Le Pen. And on Sunday, there was no such appeal. He didn't, for example, make that case. The result of the French parliamentary elections were shocking for many people. They're certainly damaging for Emmanuel Macron and will mean that his five-year term will be extremely difficult. To tell us what happened, we're joined now from Paris by Lara Marlow, Paris correspondent for the Irish Times, and a wonderful journalist for many, many years. Lara, you've seen a lot in your career as a journalist. This really destruction of Macron and his presidency, is that may be overstating it slightly, but he is severely limited with the National Assembly composed of Jean-Luc Mélenchon and, of course, Marine Le Pen.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mélenchon actually was not a candidate. He's 70 years old and he says he wants to retire. Although he will continue to have great influence. He has the second largest bloc in the parliament after Macron. He has 142 deputies in a coalition called NUPES, yes, which stands for the New Popular Union of Ecologists and Socialists. And the largest group in NUPES is Mélenchon's own party, France Unbowed. But as you say, Macron wasn't prepared for this. He, having tried to seduce Mélenchon's voters during the presidential election and really appealing to the far left, he suddenly, when he realized that Mélenchon's party was going to do very, very well in the legislative elections, he turned against them and he started equating them with Marine Le Pen and saying that the extremists on both sides were more or less equal, and that they were a menace, that France would face disorder. And the argument is always summarized in France as c'est moi ou le chaos, me or chaos.
Yes.
And it didn't work this time. It just didn't wash. And the French public are just kind of tired of Macron. Now, this could just be fatigue after 5 years, but his reputation for arrogance, the fact that he's never really learned to create consensus, to negotiate, to listen to people. He wants to rule from on high, and people were just fed up with it. And a lot of, I talked to several voters yesterday who said they still voted for his party because they thought it was the least bad party, but they couldn't sort of contain their pleasure or their satisfaction at seeing Macron humbled a little bit. They wanted to see him knocked down a peg. And today, he is at the Élysée. He's receiving all of the the parties that won, you know, big groups in the National Assembly. He's receiving Marine Le Pen, and he's already seen the Les Républicains, the Conservatives, this morning. And he's trying to find a strategy. He's trying to find a way to save his presidency. The Prime Minister, Elisabeth Borne, actually offered her resignation this morning, and Macron refused her resignation. So we don't know, is she on an ejectable seat, as the French say? Will she be thrown out once he finds somebody better? My hunch, and I haven't heard anyone say this, but the only salvation I can see for Macron is if he forms some kind of coalition, or partnership, whatever you want to call it, with Les Républicains.
Yes, that's the old Gaullist party, which
exactly
extraordinarily is so diminished.
Yes.
I think 61.
They lost more than half of their seats. They've got 64 in the new assembly, and they had, I think it was 130 in the previous one. So they lost more than half of their seats. I mean, their presidential candidate had performed very poorly in April as well. But it's just shocking to see the party of De Gaulle and Pompidou and Jacques Chirac,
yes,
and Nicolas Sarkozy just reduced to a former shadow of itself. And now they're all saying, quite a few of them have been interviewed, all the sort of leading characters in the party, and they're all saying, No deal with Macron. They don't, because they know that Macron has this habit of just kind of sucking the lifeblood out of other political parties, and he just subsumes everyone into his group, and then that's the end of them. And they feel that they're fighting for their survival as a party. But at the same time, I think that if Macron offered them something really good, for example, the prime minister's job, and not a prime minister who would have to change his party, he's already had two prime ministers from Les Républicains, both Edouard Philippe, who was his first prime minister, and Jean Castex, his second prime minister, came from Les Républicains. So it's an obvious place for him to look. And if he said, okay, you can have the prime minister's job, and the prime minister can remain a Républicain, he doesn't have to change parties like,
yes,
the last two did, that's the only thing I can imagine that would really, really tempt them. And then they could say, we are in power, we're running the government. But I think they're probably not going to settle for less. And Macron is really, really scrambling. I mean, what is he going to do? He's got the far left on the far right on either side of him. He's caught in the sort of vice between them. They're already fighting each other, by the way. NUPES, Mélenchon's group, and Marine Le Pen both want the chairmanship of the Finance Commission in the National Assembly, and they're fighting over it. It has to go to an opposition leader. I think Marine Le Pen probably has a stronger position,
yes,
in that she is in the National Assembly. She has a seat in Parliament, unlike Mélenchon, who chose not to stand. And her group has 89 seats, whereas Mélenchon's his NUPES coalition is actually breaking up already into Greens, Communists, Socialists, and so on. And she's saying, well, I have more people in my party than Mélenchon has in his, so I deserve the commission.
Yes, and that is a dramatic elevation for her.
Absolutely.
And her party, which has traditionally, I think, not done so well in elections to the National Assembly. There's an interesting story you tell of what you describe as the most symbolic victory. It's a lovely story and a very telling one, of the weekend election. And that is a candidate, Rachel Keke, a 48-year-old hotel maid, a naturalized French citizen. She comes from the Ivory Coast, and she gained notoriety for having led a 22-month strike by chambermaids at a hotel chain called Accor. And in an interview which she gave, she apologized firstly for her poor French, and she promised to talk to the cleaning ladies at the National Assembly about their working conditions. But is something touching about that story? And I wonder, is there something much more profound also?
Yes. I mean, she said she dedicated her victory to all the sort of people who are considered second-class citizens. Yes. She talked about cleaning ladies, security guards, health care workers, you know, caregivers. She said all of the forgotten workers, you know, who are ill-paid and looked down on. She said in her acceptance speech, she said, the National Assembly is ours. It's not just for the rich.
Yes.
And so there is a sort of social revenge to this election. It's quite amazing when you hear this woman, because she has a very heavy accent. Her French is very grammatically incorrect. And she just says, it's not because I don't speak French well, I don't know the grammar, that I'm not intelligent. You know, one of her fellow cleaning ladies who was the press got to said, it's not because we wash caca that we have nothing in our brains, you know.
Yes. Let me ask you about Macron. He was a globalist. He had neoliberal ideas or relative in, certainly in French terms. He wanted to increase the retirement age and alter the pension system, which is core to anyone who knows France. It's a core value that doesn't really chime at all with globalization, does it? And he tried to introduce that. He failed, really, in that endeavor. Is it a rejection of that sort of what we might call the Clintons and the Blairites, this idea of triangulation, that you can have a kind of, you can please the left and you can please the right and no harm is done to anyone?
Absolutely. I mean, and that was Macron's slogan 5 years ago, en même temps, at the same time left, at the same time
yes.
right. And the French don't like that at all. I think, you know, he said that the left-right polarization was finished. It had no meaning anymore. And I don't think the French don't like that. And both Marine Le Pen and Jean-Luc Mélenchon, you know, have said over and over and over, look what globalization has done to us. You know,
yes.
it's sent our industry abroad. It's brought our salaries down. It's impoverished our people. We want protection.
Yes, and it's and interesting. Interesting. Sorry to interrupt you, Lara, but I just want to put this point to you. The consequences and the legacies of the Clintons is Trump. The Blairites was Corbyn, who was a disaster for the left, but also the Tories, who've been in power now and have this delinquent Prime Minister, Boris Johnson. The legacy that these triangulists left, and maybe Macron will leave, is very troubling in many ways.
Yes, the Mélenchon, I think, calls it social carnage.
Yes,
breakage. La casse sociale. It's social breakage. It's not an enviable legacy. Although Macron has, as the French say, put water in his wine. I mean, he's really diluted his adherence to that kind of ideology. He doesn't really, although he still loves business people. He still has a weak spot for them and major corporations, and he still receives them in style and so on. But he's talked a lot more about social protection, especially during the pandemic. He said, we will spend whatever it costs, you know, to limit the damage to French society. And it's true, they paid furlough for millions of workers and gave, they saved the French economy from crashing. But the
yes.
result is there's an enormous debt now. And that's why, you know, he wants to reduce the payments, all kinds of welfare payments, but also raise the retirement age, because France is basically broke. But the problem is people don't really know where he stands on anything.
Yes.
He doesn't have a very, even on Ukraine, I mean, it's true of foreign policy as well as domestic policy. You know, it's always en même temps, at the same time. The only thing I'd say where he's really excelled and where he is clear, and the Le Penists and the Mélenchonists would vehemently disagree with him on this, is European integration, the European Union. That's the one question on which he's been consistently clear. But for a lot of French people, the EU also equates with globalization and liberal economics.
Yes.
And this dispute has been going on for decades, but it doesn't serve Macron well. And I don't think that you can really turn the clock back and say, well, we're ending globalization now, that even Le Pen and Mélenchon have had to say, well, we won't pull out of the EU right away, and you know, you have to accept a measure of interaction with the rest of the world, or otherwise you become Albania or North Korea.
Yes, in your piece this morning in the Irish Times, Lara, you make a very interesting point about Le Pen. You say that Marine Le Pen can legitimately claim to represent the leading opposition party. She got more votes, the 89 seats. She got 11 the last time these elections were held.
No, actually, it was 8 the last time. She's got 11 times more seats in the new parliament. Yeah. No, it's okay. It's easy to, one gets mixed up with all these figures. But it's enormous. 11 times the number of seats. And no wonder on Sunday night, you know, I was looking at all these results and so on. And Marine Le Pen comes on the television to make her speech. And I have never seen her look so happy.
Yes.
She was bubbling over. She was radiant. She was just, it hadn't really sunk in yet. The earliest estimates actually were she had fewer seats. I think that initially they said she had something like 60 and so on. And it wasn't really clear to me why she was so euphoric. And then it kind of sank in. And it was the same with French media. It was like the following morning, Monday morning, people said, Oh my God, you know, the RN, the Rassemblement National, the extreme right, you know, this is what a breakthrough for them.
Yes, and they have more seats than the France Unbowed, which is the left party, Mélenchon's party, which got 75 seats. They have 89. Does this give Marine Le Pen a stronger base from which to launch a presidential campaign in 5 years' time?
Yes, one would think so. But the next 5 years are very uncertain now. We have no idea what's going to happen. Will there just be utter chaos in France? Will the whole system break down? Or will, on the other hand, Macron make some kind of deal with Les Républicains and things will go more or less smoothly, although with a very noisy, boisterous, antagonistic and conflictual National Assembly? We just don't know. I think that she did stress in her speech on Sunday night that the Rassemblement National would be responsible. And she said that they would respect French institutions. And I wondered if what she meant was, we are not going to go into the street and burn Macron in effigy. We're not going to cause huge problems. We can't. I mean, obviously they can if they want to, but I think she was saying, we're mainstream political now. We want to play the game. And she's actually been very, very astute. I mean, nobody could have foreseen this. And the choice that she made of shunning completely Eric Zemmour, you remember,
yes,
this far-right,
yes,
polemicist who actually at one point was ahead of her in the polls last summer for the extreme right-wing vote. And she wanted nothing whatsoever to do with him. After the presidential election, he wanted to make an alliance with I almost call it the National Front. These people change names so often. With the National Rally or Rassemblement National. And she wouldn't talk to him. And people wondered, you know, was this a big mistake? Because he had, I think he had 7% of the presidential vote, which is substantial, you know. And she it turned out she made the right decision. And he's dead in the water politically at the moment. So maybe, I mean, she has, for Marine Le Pen, to get 89 seats in the National Assembly. I mean, her father, the most they ever had before was 35, and that was when Mitterrand tried out proportional representation. And she got 89 seats with the first, I won't go into the intricacies of the system, but the first past the post system until now prevented them from doing that. And the other thing which she has managed to engineer, well, actually Macron basically did it, but there was until now what they called a Republican front, which meant that if you and I don't want Marine Le Pen to be in the National Assembly, we agree to vote for each other's parties to keep the far right out of office. And that functioned until Sunday. And it's largely Macron's fault that it fell apart, because the NUPES, the far left and Greens and so on, had advised all their voters to vote for Macron over Le Pen in the presidential election. And he could have said, vote for NUPES instead of Le Pen. It might have made a difference, but in any case, all semblance of this so-called Republican front just vanished on Sunday. That was the end of it. And that helped. That was a huge help to Le Pen.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Now, one fascinating fact in your piece today in the Irish Times, Lara, is that the Gaullists and the Socialists, between them, won no seat in Paris.
That is
quite extraordinary. This is the Socialists, the party of Mitterrand, and the Gaullists, you know, and you read the distinguished list and it's not all that long in my lifetime, I'm afraid, when Charles de Gaulle was the great national hero. How could it be that the party of Chirac and Mitterrand, say, got no seat in Paris?
It's stunning. All of the Paris seats went to Macron's group, Ensemble, and Mélenchon's group, NUPES. And actually, most of the contest, a small majority of the contest in the second round were between Macron and the Mélenchon people. The Marine Le Pen's people were much more out in the countryside, and they won. But in Paris, it was this confrontation between the centrist and the left and the far left. I don't know what the answer regarding the Socialists and the Républicains. I think they've just been very badly led parties.
Yes.
Both of them. They had poor candidates for the last two presidential elections. I mean, you probably remember François Fillon, in 2017. He's been sentenced to prison. He's appealing, for,
stealing
financial.
Pounds.
Yeah, he was paying his wife and his kids from the parliamentary budget, you know, and as you say, millions of euro. So they've been very poorly led. Actually, Macron wanted to destroy those parties, which were the two main parties. You have to remember that until 2017,
yes.
These parties alternated in power, you know, 5 years one, 5 years the other, and so on. And he has destroyed them. They got a bit of a boost, the socialists, thanks to Mélenchon, because they joined his group, maintained their representation at the same level in parliament. But they're the second, you know, they're the fifth wheel on the carriage, if you like. They're not major players anymore. We know that. And Paris, too, is so symbolic because remember, yes. De Gaulle liberated Paris in the Second World War. He made that wonderful speech in front of the Hotel de Ville about Paris libéré, you know, which every school child knows. And Jacques Chirac was the mayor of Paris for, I think it was between 10 and 15 years, for a very, very long time. It was his city.
Yes.
And the socialists have had the last two mayors of Paris as well. So not to win a single seat in Paris was, as you say, Eamon, very symbolic.
Now, Macron will retain, as indeed will President Biden in the United States if they lose the House and the Senate in November, as most people expect. He will retain, the two of them, the presidents, the right to decide on foreign policy, and Europe, in the case of Macron, Macron has shown radical sort of aspirations, or hinted at them, in Europe. He wants Europe to be a federal Europe, I think. He wants it to have an army and the means to defend itself. Does all of that go, or is it likely that he will turn his back on the National Assembly as a place where legislation is crafted and delivered, and become a creature of Brussels reform, European reform, and try to... Will he be weakened, for example, in his dealings with the Germans, Olaf Scholz and his new government?
Mm-hmm. I think that the second alternative you mentioned, that Macron really doubling down on foreign policy,
yes.
I think that's more likely. That's what Chirac did after the disastrous 2005 referendum on the European treaty. He just became a sort of super foreign minister. And I think that that's what Macron will do if he really can't govern. The French say that that foreign policy is the preserve of the president. And Macron has, in his last term, certainly totally overshadowed his foreign minister. And he loves doing foreign policy. He loves striding the stage and going to summits and shaking hands with Xi Jinping and Putin and
yes.
Biden and so on. And I think that he'll probably do more of that. I mean, he's never really engaged with the National Assembly. Under French law, actually, the president cannot address the National Assembly. There's separation of powers, and that has to be respected. Totally different from the U.S., of course, where the president makes a speech to Congress every year. but he did not really cultivate. He founded this party, La République en Marche, which he renamed Renaissance, and he pulled a lot of people from both the Socialist and Les Républicains into that party.
Yeah, it was a bit like New Labour in Britain. Tony Blair pulled the same stroke. He and Clinton also, they had this thing called triangulation,
right,
which is effectively what Macron has tried to do in France.
Well, it seemed to work for a while. I mean, he did get an absolute majority in the last assembly, and almost all of them were sort of upper middle class types, you know,
yep.
tech people and all university graduates and so on. And they made a huge, they basically took over the National Assembly, but he didn't cultivate them as a party. He didn't talk to them. He didn't meet with them. He just
yes.
kind of, you know, he created this thing and then he just kind of abandoned it.
Yes.
And there's a lot of resentment within his own party of the way that people have been treated. So he's not good at domestic politics. He doesn't, I think it bores him. And I think that this is one of the reasons that he has come to grief. People think all he cares about is Ukraine and Russia. He doesn't care about us.
Yes.
And that's very dangerous for a politician.
Of course. And he also has ambitions to, aspirations to lead Europe and reshape Europe as well through Brussels. Let me ask you, Lara, finally, about the powers that the National Assembly has to legislate or to block any notions Macron might have. But as you point out, he's restricted to foreign policy largely. Does this new sort of assembly with Le Pen and Mélenchon, not elected, but in the background,
his people,
do they have the power through this assembly to reform, reshape France as we've known it?
Yes and no. I think it's more a power to block things because, you know, like to block pension reform and so on and so forth. I mean, one of the interesting things is to what extent will NUPES and the Rassemblement National, the extreme left and the extreme right, to what extent can they agree on policies? And actually, they do agree on quite a lot. They want to lower the retirement age. I think NUPES wants age 60 and Marine Le Pen wants 60 to 62. You know, they both want to increase purchasing power, increase taxes on the rich, lower retirement age. You know, so all of that sort of left-leaning social policy. In fact, a lot of people say Marine Le Pen is actually leftish in her social policy. Maybe they can push some of that through.
It's the end of the globalized France, or at least it's a major setback, is it?
Yes.
Isn't it? For the idea that France can be a part of this globalization that
if we were really optimistic, Eamon, we would think, well, maybe they will globalize the welfare state, maybe instead of having this dog eat dog, the strongest wins and to hell with people's retirement and pensions and welfare payments and all that.
Yeah.
Maybe the world will go back towards a sort of more Keynesian, trend and that might be a good thing. But the fact is, I mean, that would be good. But the problem is you have Marine Le Pen wanting to stop immigration totally.
Yes.
And fanning racism and xenophobia. You have NUPES, you know, wanting to pull out of Europe and wanting to renegotiate EU treaties and so on. So if it weren't for all that, I'd say, well, great, you know, but I think the European Union is a good thing. And I think that one should not mistreat migrants, you know, so that's the downside of it.
Okay, Lara, it's a fascinating piece you wrote today. I strongly recommend it because France, and I just wonder if you confirm this, France is one of Europe's great countries, one of the world's great countries and cultures.
Absolutely.
And anything that threatens it, we should be worried about. So this may be...
But it has a history, a very long history of discord and unrest and rebellions and revolts and revolutions. Every 30 or 40 years, basically, they have a revolt or revolution. So you have to take that into account as well.
Okay. Lara Marlowe in Paris, Paris correspondent for the Irish Times. Really outstanding piece of work you did yesterday, and it's very clear and very, very interesting. Thank you very much for joining us from Paris, Lara. We're grateful to Lara, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're concerned about mental health or looking to get into self-improvement, join me at the Piece by Piece podcast. There, I'm interviewing everyday people and experts alike about how to overcome difficulties around mental health. Speaking of which, I just released an interview with a mental health historian and another with two friends who are healthcare workers.
If these conversations interest you, check us out at Piece by Piece. That's Peace with an A, B-I, and then Peace with an I. Thank you so much.